In the world today, millions of people have never heard of Jesus Christ. They've never encountered the life-changing power of the Bible. They've never walked into a church. Some have never even met a Christian. Though the work has been underway for more than 2,000 years, there are still individuals, villages, and even whole language groups that have never received the good news, and they've never experienced the blessings that it brings to their communities, their families, and their nations. They live and die without hope, without God, without peace. But now, in this generation, we have come to the end, when every human being on earth must hear of Jesus' name. People from every tribe and nation are welcomed into the kingdom of God. Our global work toward this goal is not finished. The great commission that Jesus gave his disciples, we are nearer to completing that mission today than at any time in history. He said that we must go and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything that he commanded. He promised to be with us always, even to the end of the age. You and I have the opportunity to join this vision and to be part of what God is doing in hearts across the world. In looking to Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, we must take seriously his command to share the good news with every person everywhere. We can be a part of the greatest movement of God's Spirit in history. And God is moving. He is changing lives. He is setting captives free. He is transforming families. He is renewing and reviving churches. New churches are being planted across the world today. He is sending forth his word to the very ends of the earth. The harvest, Jesus said, is plentiful. And the workers, well, he is raising new workers up every day to go forth. In America, in Asia, everywhere. All that remains now is for us to join what God is doing. To obey his call. To finish the great work. Millions are waiting. Welcome to Great Commission Radio with India Gospel League. I'm your host, Dan Jarvis.
Well, today we have a special treat. Sam Stevens, the president of India Gospel League, is interviewing Reggie McNeil. Both men just finished a missions conference in Salem, India, that gathered Christian workers from across the world to pray and to consider the missionary task. I'll turn it over to Sam now in Salem, India.
Reggie, first of all, I want to begin by saying thank you for taking the time and making the effort to be with us in India, for accepting our invitation. And we've been so honored and privileged to have you here. But more than that, if I may say so, we've learned a lot from your time with us. We've just finished a conference here in Salem with about 400, 500 of the frontline workers. But then you and I have spent some time with the leadership. And for me, it's always an encouragement to be with the leaders, to kind of invest in their lives. And thank you for sharing that time with me.
Well, it's been my privilege, Sam. I think I've told you over and over. You're right, this is my first trip to India. I had some idea of what to expect from friends of mine who've been here for other assignments. But I will say that I think India changes people. I think there are cultures. I've been to lots of places in the world, and you can visit and kind of slide through, and it doesn't necessarily grab you. I think India just sinks its tendrils into you. It just somehow infects you. I don't think you can spend a week here and not carry something back that changes you. And so I am very privileged to have been infected now with a bit of Indian culture, and of course to see believers that are living through the Book of Acts, not reading the Book of Acts, but living and experiencing the Book of Acts, to be here at ground central of the Christian movement in the world today. I mean, more maybe, as you and I have talked, maybe half of every new believer in the world today, not half of every believer, but half of the new believers in the world are are coming to Jesus in India.
Right.
So to get to visit Pentecost has been intriguing for me. So it's really just been all my learning. I don't know what I said here that was could be all that helpful, unless I helped slow this thing down for you a little bit.
No. You've helped us a lot. You've helped us to think in a new way. Yeah. But we'll come to that. You've, of course, traveled all over the world, and you say there's something about India that kind of sticks with you. If you were to put your finger on one or two things, what would you point out?
Well, I think, of course, spiritually, any of us who come here as church leaders and mm-hmm. spiritual leaders, especially from the West, there's a darkness here that is unmistakable,
right,
and can be overwhelming,
right.
We use figurative language back in the States to talk about, mm-hmm. you know, false gods, and we have to make up these analogies. It's not like riding down the road here and seeing idol after idol after idol,
exactly.
and people literally enslaved to man-made yeah. gods. Yeah. I mean, that's so foreign to us.
It's not just seeing it and talking about it. It's really feeling it.
You feel it.
Yeah.
You realize that worldview has so much to do with a lack of progress. I think you've been really insightful to help me understand that link between a Hindu view of the world and gods, and,
right.
and why the Christian view of progress and moving toward an eschaton and an end and a better world, and
mm-hmm.
Not a world that we revisit a number of times, the fatalism of Hinduism and the hopelessness
right.
Of that. So I think that certainly I would say that's one of the big things that sticks out. A second thing that immediately confronts someone from the West is just how many people there are.
Right.
Just people. You see it on television. You can go see Slumdog Millionaire, and you think, well, how do they get all those people together to make that set, you know, instead of just realizing all they did was open the camera. You know,
right.
it's just, we're standing here in a sea of people. But the third thing, and I didn't know what to expect, and it wasn't that I was expecting something negatively, but the people I've been around, which have been primarily believers, of course, with my assignment here, but just the hospitality
mm-hmm.
and the warmth of the people. And I know Jesus has something to do with that when he comes into people's lives, but you know, I've had, there's just a winsomeness
right.
of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one of my first experiences here, of course, was seeing all the children at the orphanage here. You have 250
right,
kids?
Right, close to 250.
Yeah. And how precious. And then at that church yesterday out in the village, you know, the children sitting there looking up. And I'm captured by the people. And I didn't necessarily expect that, but it's happened.
Well, generally, Indians are very hospitable.
Oh.
They're good-looking, too, aren't they?
Certainly. At least those in this room, where I am, are just great pieces of God's workmanship, let me say.
No, the lighter side aside, but Indians, they are very hospitable.
Yes.
They like to entertain people, and even if a stranger walks into a house, they will make sure that they don't leave without, you know, having given them something.
Really?
So whether they're Hindu or Christian, they're very hospitable. But you're right. Being in the company of fellow believers, you feel something very special. And
And I would say, yeah, you've pointed out something else, too. I think in the United States, we always enjoy going to our, gatherings as believers. We enjoy seeing our friends and having fellowship. But there's not... I would say that for many of us in the United States, we're not as desperate to be mm-hmm. with that crew because we're surrounded by so many people with shared world vision and values, even if they're not a member of our church or whatever. But I can see here how important the gatherings right. are, and how right. desperate, like these pastors, just to be with other believers that number in the hundreds mm-hmm. when they're working in villages where the number of believers numbers in the teens or right. in some cases single digits as they're just getting started.
Right. Right.
So how encouraging it is for them to be in the company mm-hmm. of other believers. So that's been really impressive to see just how critical community is. And that's something else that I didn't realize.
Mm-hmm.
I should have. I've studied world religions, and I knew this at one level, but just to be reminded that Hindu religion is such a privatized experience. You can have 100 people at the temple, but they're all going through their personal ritual.
Right.
There's no shared
right.
liturgy or shared, right. you know.
Yeah.
And so Christianity here creates community.
Exactly.
On multiple levels.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're doing, and it's just magnificent. To watch and to see how you were doing it.
Right. Yeah, you're right. That's a great observation. The fact that the Hindus do not have what we might call a corporate gathering to
right.
worship or to have fellowship, you know, those type of things are not there.
Yeah.
And when people gather together, especially in the kind of situations that you and I have been in this past week, it's very meaningful for these pastors and also for the believers to come together in those kind of large gatherings. And that's one of the things that we really give a lot of importance to create those opportunities for them to come together and help them understand that they're not out there isolated.
Yes.
And it's a source of great encouragement to them.
Well, you're doing magnificently with it. Everywhere I'm from the conference here to the village dedication of the Life Center, what in the U.S. we would, you know, the gathering place, all of those venues, it's just obvious that people are enjoying one another. When they find Jesus, they don't just find God, they find other people, and it's wonderful to see.
Right. The church in India is growing, and you've heard a lot of stories during the pastor's conference that we had of how, you know, churches, congregations of believers are being established in
yes.
villages that are being exposed to the message for the first time and
right.
so on. What are your impressions? How do you feel when you listen to those kind of stories?
Oh, my goodness. For me, it's like being thrown into the first century, something that I've had to study or read as if it's an archaeological and historical artifact, you know, the Book of Acts, but here you are living through this. To be in that village yesterday and to realize that we're not talking about charter members of, you know, that have been here for four generations, and but to realize that every single believer in that room probably is a first generation, you know, first time believer, and I mean, it's all a first generation
right,
growth. I
right.
mean, it's just that's that gets us back close to the origins of the movement, and it's very exciting. But I'll tell you something else that I am completely in resonance with, and that is that when in the West we talk about sharing the gospel, so many times that's been mm-hmm. reduced to sharing a set of doctrinal propositions
right.
or asking someone to make a decision or, you know, argue them into a theological position on God or something. But here what you're doing, again, that's reflective of the first century, it's the good news of the kingdom. I mean,
exactly.
we just talk about gospel, good news, but it's a good news about something.
Right,
Jesus
right.
always comes on, and he announces the gospel of the kingdom.
Right.
Well, the kingdom is about the lame walking, the blind seeing, the lepers being made whole. Your ministry with lepers here and helping kids to learn to read,
right.
not to go through life blindly. I mean, besides physical blindness, there are all or spiritual blindness. And so you're to see that you're doing kingdom work here, not just church work, but, you know, it's not just about establishing. It's establishing the church, but not establishing a church, as if we're going to create some place where spiritual things happen.
Right.
No, you're helping people read, and you're doing a microeconomic development and finance, and so villagers have a way up and a way out, and helping animal husbandry progress and veterinary science move forward. I met two veterinary surgeons in your conference this week.
Right.
I mean, these are magnificent human beings that are helping better the lives of people in their village, and that's what the gospel is. It's not the gospel. We've shrink-wrapped it in America down to just, am I okay with God? I mean, did I get my ticket punched for eternity out there? Am I going to wind up at the right destination when we pull out of the, you know, train station here? Are you kidding? What an anemic view of what God intended. I mean, here you actually believe loving your neighbor and making a difference in the community matters. And so that's what I've been so excited to see. Is that, of course, you're proclaiming the truth, the central truth of the gospel about Jesus and what people need, people need salvation. But you're demonstrating the gospel, not proclaiming, just proclaiming.
Right, living it out.
You're living it out.
In the community.
In community. And that's in your community development is going to change India. What you are doing is societal transformation at its fundamental DNA building block level. You are giving people a different view and the possibility that things can be different.
That's really our vision. It's not simply going into a village and trying to win a few people to the Lord, quote-unquote, in the traditional sense of the term as it is used, but really going there and planting or establishing the kingdom. And that's done through a small congregation of believers, you know, who are, you know, who come to the Lord and then they start worshiping and then they're properly taught and trained, but then also equipped to reach out to the community and touch the lives of people in the community.
Sam, I love the fact that you don't call your church buildings the church. I mean, you call your people the church.
Right.
I mean, you know, the people of God is the church. It's not. I love the fact that you use the term life centers for the building, for instance, that we dedicated yesterday.
Right.
Because, yeah, believers gather there to worship, but that's a center of life for the community. And after all, that's what Jesus said, I've come to give you life.
Right.
He didn't say, I've come to give you church and give it to you more abundantly. You know, it's abundant life. So I just love the fact that you're communicating that so well. And sure enough, these facilities, I'm thinking of another village that I visited, and when I got there, school's in session. And there were probably 40, 50 kids there learning to read, and they'll be the first person in their family to know how to read.
Exactly.
And so, I mean, that changes everything. Everything. And so what you're doing here to do that is societal transformation at its fundamental level. And to see that happening, and if I could live to be 300 years old or 120 years old or whatever and come back to a different India, it'll be because of what you're doing. And I would know, if you could transport me 100 years from now and India's different, I would know exactly. I could say, yeah, I was there. I saw it. You were here to get it started, but I saw it. It's just I'm just that impressed with the capacity of the kingdom to make that kind of difference. We lose that in the West because we've been in this Christendom model. We assume, and we have so much, but here you see the kingdom changes everything.
Right. It's really going back to the pages of the New Testament.
Oh, yes.
How the good news was proclaimed and how dramatic changes were wrought in the communities where it took roots.
Because the early church did what you're doing, or if you want to say it another way, you're doing what the early church did. There was plenty of sharing of proclaiming. But it was primarily a demonstration,
mm-hmm.
a demonstrating of the gospel, a community of people who are living differently from all the people around them. And so that early church, through sacrificial love, just in 300 short years, became the predominant religion or spiritual expression in the old Roman Empire. I don't think at the rate you're going here, it's going to take 300 years in India. But if Jesus doesn't come back, the way that your people are living, if you can capture that and hang on to it and not change it, in short years, I could see Christianity becoming a predominant, if not the dominant spiritual orientation. Because you and I both know Hindu, 300 million Hindu gods can't stack up against our one God.
No, they can't. And people see it.
They see it.
It's demonstrated.
Yeah.
They see the way that they have lived for centuries, and then now they see the dramatic changes taking place once that worldview changes, and they're able to break free from that kind of a fatalistic, cyclic thinking.
Yeah.
Dramatic changes take place, and I just thank God that He has allowed me, even in my lifetime of ministry, to see those changes take place, at least in a few small places in India.
Well, I think more than a few. You're being really modest here. I mean, for those of you listening, I'm sitting here talking to a guy who's been at this for several decades or 20 decades of intense effort at planting the church.
Two decades.
In India. And 70,000 congregational
right.
Manifestations of this. I mean, those are numbers that are overwhelming in any North American context. We have no frame of reference for something that explosive. And you're on your way to doubling that in the next 10 years, probably.
Well, I would request your prayer and also the prayer of all of our listeners to pray with us as we move forward with this vision that God has given to us.
And can
it's
I
working.
Say, well,
yes.
It is working, not because it's a method.
Mm-mm.
It's working because it's the kingdom. I just want to punctuate that again. You're not going in and planting a worship service
right.
and hoping a church grows up around it and then it sustains itself and then has a bunch of programs. You're going into these villages to change the village, to do community and societal transformation with the
exactly.
the message of the kingdom and the demonstration of the kingdom. 75,000 demonstrations, not preaching points, and life centers coming alongside to punctuate that and to provide a better life for that whole community. It's so amazing.
Right.
I marvel at your work.
As much as I've appreciated hearing Sam and Reggie discuss missions, we've come to the end of our program. Today I'd like to invite you to participate in the work of India Gospel League. You can begin by calling our office at 330-650-5900, or you can simply visit us online at www.iglworld.org. At iglworld.org, you'll find not only previous editions of our program here, Great Commission Radio, but also a whole host of information about the specific projects you can be involved in with India Gospel League. Partners of our ministry are involved in everything from caring for needy children to planting churches in unreached villages. We'd love to count you as a part of our team, as a part of our family, and you can begin that relationship with us and begin that journey toward helping complete the Great Commission at www.iglworld.org. Or if you'd like to call, I'll again give the phone number. That's 330 650-5900.
This program has been furnished by the India Gospel League of Salem, India and Hudson, Ohio. To learn more about our work and to join in the vision, go to iglworld.org.